San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness.
A blueprint for the new United Nations. In the age of globalization, the resistance to globalization needs to be global as well. Milun Kothari and David Korchin make that point at the counter teach-in to the UN Millennium Meeting in New York in September of 2000. They suggest that the United Nations could play that role if civil society were to take over and reform the United Nations, while terminating the Bretton Woods institutions such as the IMF, the World Bank, and the WTO. David Korchin describes in detail how a reformed UN could replace Bretton Woods. But first, we will hear from Milun Kothari from India. He says that resistance to globalization and the WTO is well underway in the branches of the United Nations that concern themselves with human rights and the environment. Milun Kothari coordinates the New Delhi-based International NGO Committee on Human Rights in Trade and Investment. He is also the coordinator of the Housing and Land Rights Committee of the Habitat International Coalition. Here is his summary of the resistance within the UN to globalization, the World Bank, and the IMF. Milun Kothari.
The United Nations bodies have, in the last 4 years or so, taken great strides in tackling the issue of globalization. I refer to the work in particular of the UN Subcommission for the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights, which is mentioned several times today for their work on transnational corporations. And I also refer to the work of the UN Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. In 1998, the UN Committee adopted a statement which said that on globalization, which stated that it is particularly important to emphasize that the realms of trade, finance, and investment are in no way exempt from the general principles of human rights, and that the international organizations with specific responsibilities in those areas should play a positive and constructive role in relation to human rights. During that same year, in the August of 1998, the UN Subcommission adopted what has become a historic resolution, which was titled Human Rights as the Primary Objective of Trade, Investment, and Financial Policy. And in that resolution, which was adopted at a time when the Multilateral Agreement on Investment was being negotiated at the OECD, the UN Subcommission pointed out the possible human rights implications of the MAI, and particularly about the extent to which the agreement might limit the capacity of states to take proactive steps to ensure the enjoyment of economic, social, and cultural rights by all people, creating benefits for a small, privileged minority at the expense of an increasingly disenfranchised majority. And the subcommission in this resolution continues to state that they are convinced, the UN is convinced of the need to re-emphasize the centrality and primacy of human rights obligations in all areas of governance and development, including international and regional trade investment, financial policies, agreements, and practices. And this resolution also urged members of the OECD to take human rights obligations into consideration during the drafting of the MAI. This resolution was part of the body of material which ultimately led to the downfall of the MAI. During that same year, the UN Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights released a statement expressly directed to the WTO meeting in Seattle, where it stated that liberalization in trade, investment and finance does not necessarily create and lead to a favorable environment for the realization of economic, social, and cultural rights. Trade liberalization must be understood as a means and not an end. The end which trade liberalization should serve is the objective of human well-being, to which the international human rights instruments give legal expression. During this year, just last month in August, the UN Human Rights Program has gone much further. and they have adopted resolutions and initiated studies that are now directly confronting the World Trade Organization. The subcommission reviewed a study by the rapporteurs on globalization, which states, I'll just quote a few paragraphs, that indeed the assumptions on which the rules of the WTO are based are grossly unfair and even prejudiced. Those rules also reflect an agenda that serves only to promote dominant corporatist interests that already monopolize the arena of international trade. The result of the analysis of this study on globalization is that the net result is that for certain sectors of humanity, particularly the developing countries of the South, the WTO is a veritable nightmare. The fact that women are largely excluded from the WTO decision-making structures and that the rules evolved by the WTO are largely gender insensitive means that women as a group stand to gain little from this organization. What does this tell us? This essentially tells us that there is one part of the UN system that is holding strong, that is not wavering in the attack on economic globalization, and that is in fact questioning the very basis of the multilateral economic institutions and the multilateral agreements that have come into play. And that is essentially saying that there is a conflict between one regime that we have all adopted, the human rights regime, and in fact the subcommission resolution also refers to the Convention on Biological Diversity, so the environmental agreements and trade investment and other policies. And this is a direct challenge from within the UN system to the whole edifice of economic globalization. What we need to do now is not to stand by and watch as these two parallel regimes continue, but essentially to take over the UN. And it's interesting that if we contemplate taking it over, we will be assisted in this noble task by UN bodies themselves. Thank you very much.
That was Milun Kothari. He is the coordinator of the New Delhi-based International NGO Committee on Human Rights in Trade and Investment. He spoke at the counter-teach-in to the UN Millennium Meeting, organized by the International Forum on Globalization. David Corton was the next speaker, and he lays out in great detail what the tasks of a reformed United Nations would be and how the WTO, World Bank, and IMF can be replaced. David Corton speaks from the position of an insider, since he used to work for the other side. He was a former USAID field specialist and former faculty member of the Harvard University School of Business. He left that world in 1992 and joined the International Forum on Globalization. He has become a best-selling author of anti-corporate books, such as his first success, When Corporations Rule the World. Here is David Corton at the festive closing address of the IFG teach-in in New York.
I'm beginning to feel that the tide is truly turning. But this, I think we're beginning to see that Seattle and all the parallel events are beginning to make a real difference. I don't know if any of you happen to notice in the airport stands on your way here the cover of the current Business Week. Too much corporate power. Yeah, on Business Week. And what's it say inside? It says, according to the Business Week polls, 75% of Americans think corporations have too much power. Now, I think that's a majority. You know what happened in Seattle? We stopped the WTO meeting. But it's very important to understand exactly what was going on there. There were two things happening. There were those of us who were in the streets saying, no more corporate tyranny. We're going to have democracy. No more rule by money. We're going to have values centered on life. But that wasn't the only thing that shut that meeting down. Because the other thing that was going on inside were the government representatives, particularly from the G77, from the poor countries, were looking out there on the streets And they were seeing that the U.S. government that's been pushing its agenda on the rest of the world, intimidating the other countries of the world, didn't really have the support of its own citizens. And as a result, they felt emboldened to stand up and say, no, we're not going to take any more of this nonsense. We begin to see here the foundations of another alliance between the institutions of civil society and the world's progressive government leaders. Civil society providing a mandate to governments. And be clear what it is we're doing. It's our government. So most of us here in this room are citizens of the United States. And it's our government that's turned out to be the most dangerous rogue government in the world. And part of our responsibility is to stand up, reclaim democracy in our country, and put an end to that. Now, my focus this evening is on the institutions that govern the global economy. Currently, these governance functions are divided between the United Nations system and the Bretton Woods system. The UN system is comprised of the United Nations Secretariat, its specialized agencies such as the World Health Organization, International Labor Organization, Food and Agriculture Organization, and the UN's various development assistance funds, UNDP, UNIFEM, UNFPA, and UNICEF. The Bretton Woods system, as you're well aware, is comprised of the World Bank, the IMF, and the World Trade Organization. The UN system has by far the broader mandate, is more open and democratic, and in its practice has demonstrated a commitment to human, social, and environmental priorities. By contrast, the secretive and undemocratic Bretton Woods institutions have consistently aligned with the interests of money, banks, and global corporations. Now, it's quite clear if we look back in history that the founders of the United Nations intended that responsibility for managing global economic affairs, including the overall supervision and policy direction of the Bretton Woods institutions, would fall under the jurisdiction of the United Nations General Assembly and its Economic and Social Council. Coming back to our government, at least since 1981, the U.S. government has actively undermined the UN's ability to fulfill its mandate. It has instead supported the Bretton Woods institutions as acting as global governments unto themselves, imposing their will on nations in disregard of both the democratic will of their own people and the terms of the UN conventions and treaties. Now, why would our government not want the United Nations, the Bretton Woods institutions under UN supervision? Well, if you see how it's worked out, it's pretty clear. Because under the present arrangements, the World Bank and IMF take their marching orders from the U.S. Department of Treasury, which in turn marches to the tune of Wall Street banks and investment houses. Absolute direct link. The WTO functions under the guidance of the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, which functions as an extension of the U.S. Business Roundtable, a lobbying arm of the largest U.S.-based transnational corporations. And there you have it. Direct line of command from U.S. banks and corporations through the U.S., these unelected branches of the U.S. government, down to the Bretton Woods institutions to reshape the world. We live in one world. We live in one world. And dividing the governance of its affairs between two competing governmental systems, one that represents people in matters of labor, health, food, human rights, and environmental concerns, and another that represents corporations in matters of trade, investment, and development, has resulted in a grotesque distortion of human priorities. The need for a holistic, life-centered approach to addressing human needs is now far more evident even than in 1945, and the need for global cooperation more urgent. So we have a choice. As some have suggested, we could expand the power and mandate of the Bretton Woods triumvirate to cover labor, health, food, human rights, and environmental affairs, thus limiting the UN's role to matters of military security, refugees, and emergency relief. Or we could reaffirm the original mandate of the United Nations and build its capacity to fulfill its intended function. Judged by their actions, the Bretton Woods institutions dream of a world in which all public services are run for profit by corporations. All goods and services for domestic consumption are imported from abroad and paid for with money borrowed from foreign banks. And all productive assets and natural resources are owned and managed by global corporations producing for export to generate the foreign exchange needed to repay the foreign loans. This economic absurdity is the dream of global financiers and corporations. It is surely not the dream of the world's people. To further expand the powers and mandate of the Bretton Woods institutions would be rather like giving the fox the keys to the chicken coop. Our goal must be to reclaim for people the political and economic spaces the Bretton Woods institutions have colonized. One system of governance under the United Nations system. Another key point, on which I find we're getting clear consensus in the IFG. Some say, well, we need institutions like the World Trade Organization that have real teeth, institutions that can make and impose labor and environmental standards on every country right down to the local level, the same way the WTO imposes trade and investment standards down to the local level. I think we're getting clear in the IFG that we reject that approach. Corporate rule can be imposed from the top down, from the global to the local. Democracy, by contrast, must be built from the bottom up, from the local to the global. Our need is not for global institutions with the power and mandate to dictate local behavior. Our need is for global institutions that assure the right and freedom of local people everywhere to fully express their creative capacities toward the creation of a world responsive to their values, their needs, and their aspirations. Okay, so what do we actually need to do? In the course of human affairs, we find from time to time that by their nature, certain institutions are so inherently at odds with human freedom and well-being and so far beyond reform that they must be dismantled and replaced with more responsive and accountable institutional forms. As our forebears eliminated the institutions of monarchy in favor of the institutions of democracy, we must now eliminate the institutions of Bretton Woods, the World Bank, the IMF, and the World Trade Organization in favor of the United Nations. For all its evident faults and deficiencies, the United Nations, in stark contrast to the Bretton Woods institutions, is sound in concept and mandate. It is relatively open and democratic. Its institutional structures are reformable. Some would argue we should get rid of the Security Council. Perhaps so. That can be done within the framework. Furthermore, redirecting to the United Nations the generous public funding now so badly misused by the Bretton Woods institutions would quickly eliminate the UN's financial and human resource deficits. Perhaps the greatest barrier to building a United Nations with the capacity to fulfill its necessary role is the recent corporate push to co-opt the UN's resources, policies, and even its logo to their own ends to preclude any action by the UN that might hold corporations accountable to the public interest. The United Nations is properly an institution of the world's governments and all of the people those governments represent. Corporations, by their nature, represent only the short-term financial interests of a very small and wealthy elite. Corporations have no legitimate place in the deliberations and decision processes of the United Nations, nor of any other public governing body. If the UN is to be effective in its essential role of advancing the reform and democratization of economic relations among and within nations, we must get the corporations out. We must hold the UN and our own governments accountable for creating an institutional and policy framework for a planetary system of locally rooted, globally cooperative, just, sustainable, and compassionate economies based on principles of authentic development and responsive to the needs of all. Now, of course, the mandate of the task ahead of us is compounded by the need to rebuild a United Nations suffering from years of neglect, to dismantle the institutions of Bretton Woods and undo the enormous damage they have wrought, and to create new institutions with more appropriate mandates and structures within the UN system. So let's look at some of the proposals that we're coming forward with from the IFG. By its every action, the World Bank has increased the foreign indebtedness of low-income countries. We feel it is not useful for low-income countries to be deeply in international debt. Surprise? So that suggests it's time to replace the World Bank with the United Nations International Insolvency Court, to which indebted countries can turn for assistance in freeing themselves from the chains of international debt and from IMF conditionality without sacrificing their ability to provide essential public services. The International Monetary Fund forces countries to give up control over the flow of money and goods across their borders, leading to massive trade imbalances, international indebtedness, exploitation, and financial instability. Not helpful. It's time to replace the IMF with a United Nations International Finance Organization responsible for helping countries stay out of international debt by keeping their current accounts balanced, helping national governments establish capital controls that strengthen domestic employment, domestic investment, domestic ownership, and domestic technical capability, and discourage financial speculation, and coordinating international action to prevent money laundering by international and offshore banks and tax evasion by individuals and corporations using offshore tax havens. So that takes care of the IMF. The World Trade Organization. Here's an organization that regulates national and local governments to prohibit them from regulating transnational corporations, trade, and finance in the public interest. Again, not helpful. So let's replace the WTO with the United Nations Organization for Corporate Accountability. Okay, what would the United Nations Organization for Corporate Accountability do? Well, might facilitate antitrust action to break up global concentrations of corporate power, giving special attention to banking, media, and agribusiness. See how creative we can get? It's not that hard to figure out what we're for. The Organization for Corporate Accountability could also facilitate dechartering procedures against transnational corporations with repeat convictions for criminal behavior. Three strikes and you're out. It could facilitate legal action by those who are harmed by a corporate subsidiary in one country so they can collect damages from the parent country company based in another country. It could establish an enforceable international code of conduct covering all corporations with operations in more than one country, including a strict prohibition on corporate political participation. The WTO has consistently given priority to trade over concerns for labor, health, food safety, food security, and environmental standards. We must be clear that trade is a means, not an end. We're not against trade, but we just think that it ought to be useful to people and to the environment, which suggests that responsibility for matters relating to employment, food safety and security, human environmental health, and other aspects of human and planetary well-being properly rests not with trade lawyers, but with the relevant UN agencies, such as the World Health Organization, the International Labor Office, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and the United Nations Environment Program. Some of you may have heard, for example, the WHO is currently in the process of trying to get countries organized around an international agreement to do something about tobacco companies and their sales. You know an interesting thing? Our government, which is collecting reparations from the tobacco companies, is out actively trying to undermine this process, trying to facilitate the movement of our tobacco companies into other countries so that they can make the money to repay our government. Now, how's that for a resource transfer from the poor to the rich? Anyhow, you know, we certainly wouldn't expect the WTO to go out and start trying to negotiate a treaty to harness the tobacco companies. But here's the UN agency doing it, and we need to get behind that effort. Now, though I focused here on the need for political and institutional reforms at the global level, equally serious reforms are needed at local and national level. And of course, nowhere is such reform more urgently needed than here in the United States. as we have been noting, our government has been the chief architect of the destructive policies of the Bretton Woods institutions and the chief architect of weakening the United Nations. Time after time, it has acted to undermine democracy and authentic development in southern countries, and it now stands as the chief barrier to the reform of the destructive structures of corporate globalization. Those of us who hold U.S. citizenship have a special obligation to the world to end this travesty through the deep reform of our political system. Here's another practical action. It's time to let the politicians know we want the cesspool of politics as usual cleaned up. The task before us is to create a coherent system of global governance under the auspices of the United Nations, provide the UN with the human and financial resources to fulfill its original mandate, purge it of corporate influence, and introduce the reforms needed to strengthen the UN's function as a democratic governing body. We have long waited passively, confident that somehow our institutions would fulfill our dreams of peace, justice, and prosperity for all people. Now we know the truth. Our institutions have no such magical powers. The creative energies of humanity reside within people like us. And our dreams will become reality only through our own commitment and creative effort. If our institutions block our creative expression, we, the people of the United Nations, can change them. That is our right. That is our responsibility to ourselves, to one another, and to the earth that sustains us all.
That was David Corton, former USAID field specialist and former faculty member of the Harvard University School of Business. He joined the resistance to globalization in 1992. He is the author of When Corporations Rule the World and the Post-Corporate World. He's also chair of the board of directors of Yes Magazine. This is the last program in an 8-part series on the complicity of the leadership of the United Nations with globalization and corporations and the attempt to reform and take over this institution. It was recorded in September of 2000 in New York at the teach-in of the International Forum on Globalization. You can get this talk by David Corton on a one-hour tape that also includes Vandana Shiva for $12. The transcript of this full 4-hour series is $12 as well. For a credit card order, call us toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE and let us know if you want the transcript or the tape or both. That's 1-877-TUC-TAPE. Or send your $12 check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. My name is Mariah Gilardin. Thank you for listening.